It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter on X at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can catch us on the radio dial 929 FM or 680 AM, but stay up to date and listen to us anywhere, anytime on the Odyssey app. It's free to download, free to listen. All you have to do is go download the Odyssey app in your app store today. Dennis Fuller produced the program for us. Glad that he is with us. My company, as he is every Tuesday and Friday, it's a football Friday. He, of course, is Tim Murray. He's the host of VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast, VSiN's College Football Betting Tailgate Show, starting live tomorrow, 9 a.m. Central Time. VSiN Primetime on weeknights on Twitter, X at 1TimMurray. Tim, good day, sir.
It is a good day, a football Friday, and I'm fired up, man. It's going to be a great Saturday, hopefully, for my bankroll. It has not been ideal so far, but
yeah.
You know, you got to keep trusting the process. You can't venture off. We've had success before. We will continue to embrace the stink. Because you know, when you're betting ugly underdogs, it's never too fun. But man, I'm fired up. This is a great weekend of college football. Four showdowns between top 25 teams. We get to maybe learn a little bit more about Miami tonight. Well, they just continue to absolute destroy teams. And then you and I love our late night get back games, and there might not be much better than Boise State, Washington State. 9 o'clock Central, FS1. Sit down with a cocktail and live bet the hell out of that game.
Do we have Papa? The guy from LA does the sports talk show. Papa, what are pasta or Papa Pacas, something like that?
Yeah,
Petro
Papadakis.
Yeah, hopefully he's on the call for that one. All right, let's start.
I gotta see if my boy Dan Helly's calling the game. Let me look on here. Boise State game. Well, you start what you want to get into.
All right.
You're gonna start yelling at people. So I'm gonna look some things up.
All right, we gotta start with an airing of the grievances because there's I got a lot of problems.
I thought Festivus was in December.
And it's December 23rd. But you know what? Festivus is more of a spirit than it is a day. You know, it should live inside of you at all times. And I got a lot of problems with you people, and you're about to hear about it. So we're going to start with that. Blake Topmeyer going to join us as he does each and every Friday. Presumably, he is headed towards Tuscaloosa for the big matchup between the Bulldogs and the Crimson Tide. We'll talk all things college football with Blake here in about 30 minutes or so. We'll get into the list out of Vince Williams' injury. We'll also get into, of course, our betting cards then, games of the weekend. We'll tell your story, and then we will get out of here. But, Tim, this is where I'd like to start. Did I watch a different Thursday night football game than everybody else?
Are you asking that? I didn't know if you were waiting for me to answer you. Or
I wake up. And there is nothing worse.
I didn't know if you wanted the dramatic pause.
No,
for like,
when your team
emphasis.
Sucks, there is nothing worse than a primetime game. Because everyone flies in and has a take on your team, and they've watched zero snaps of your team. And I don't blame them. The Giants are not a fun watch. They're not a good watch. I'm not saying people should be watching the Giants. But there's nothing worse than having everyone have a take on your team. Just let me be in obscurity on Fox at noon with the fourth team. Give me the Sanchez and whoever the Sanchez is partnered up with on team four, and just let me die in peace. But I wake up today, and every single talk show, every single thing I'm reading is, Daniel Jones sucks. Daniel Jones lost in the game. And I feel like I'm just on this giant emotional roller coaster of Daniel Jones from the day that we drafted him. I was like, I remember I was at dinner with I don't even know if we were engaged at that point. We were in Florida my now wife and I are at dinner, and I'm following the draft on my phone, and she's like, what are they going to do with the draft pick? And I was like, I don't know, something stupid like get Daniel Jones in the first round. And so that's where my relationship with him starts. But at a certain point, he becomes your guy. And do I think Daniel Jones is a top 10 quarterback? No, I'm not blind. But this idea that he was the reason they lost last night is absolutely insane. Like, do people even watch? Like, that's the question.
No.
Do people even watch the game? Because no. Even, like, that's the other thing. If you just read a stat box or a stat sheet, the stat sheet's not bad.
I thought Daniel Jones played a very solid game yesterday, and I watched the whole thing. We were on air, so I didn't get to hear Al Michaels, apparently.
Oh, Al might be back. Al
zingers at the refs.
Al, last night, I think the only thing that maybe brought Al back from the dead was how disgusted he was with the officiating. I meant to go pull the clip, but there's an all-timer. What he dropped... Oh yeah, he's like there are fouls on both teams. The whatever the official goes, there's fouls on both teams. And Michaels goes, I bet. Like as the guy was getting ready to give his announcement, which is also a double entendre because as we know, Al big fan of betting in general.
Yeah, and he I know he made reference at the missed field goal at the end of the game.
Yeah.
From Aubrey, but no, I thought Daniel Jones was solid last night. I mean, the irony of last night's game was that the Giants lost a game because they didn't have a field goal kicker, and that was a game that I had the Giants, so I much appreciated their Brian Daboll and Joe Shane. But they could only kick field goals last night. And here's the thing, because we had on Paul Charchian, who is one of the best fantasy football prop guys out there, in my opinion, and he loved Devin Singletary yesterday over on all of his stuff because the Cowboys' run defense is poop town. But what Mike Zimmer did last night was said, you're not going to be able to run on us. So Daniel Jones had to make plays with his arm. And I know not everything is gambling, but Daniel Jones's prop for passing yards was like 202. Threw for 281 last night. Was efficient. You know, you're going to look at the box score for people who didn't watch the game, and they're going to say, oh, no touchdowns and a pick. Well, the pick, as you alluded to before we started the show, we were just talking off air, which is his pick was a desperation heave after the Aubrey missed field goal to end the game. Like, he had to force it down the field. Wandale Robinson had 11 receptions yesterday. Malik Nabers had 12 catches. Like, he was getting the ball out. He was getting people involved. Look, I'm not a big Daniel Jones fan. I'm maybe not the biggest critic because I think when people get too far one side or the other, I have to kind of come try to be in the middle. He was good last night. He wasn't great, but he was good.
Yeah, and like this is the whole deal. And I think it started with the in-season hard knocks or whatever, the off-season hard knocks. I think where I've had to take up the black and go to the wall to defend Daniel, the Giants are trying to scapegoat him. And it's like, we have so many more problems than just Daniel Jones. Like, is Daniel Jones the answer? No, but like you're moving on from him anyway. So like at a certain point, it's an exercise in futility. But this idea that all of a sudden, if you just got a different quarterback, the Giants would be good. Like that is patently insane. Yes, maybe if you give us Mahomes, we might have a shot. But the rest of the roster still stinks. Besides Malik. Malik's awesome. As Malik Nick Saban said, Malik Nabers is an effing problem.
Yeah, Malik Nabers is the real deal, man. And you hope that this concussion doesn't hold him out too long. Hopefully he's able to play as soon as possible. He's awesome. And you kind of got that from Hard Knocks as well. But yeah, this is a team that it feels like it's kind of, I don't want to say full teardown because, you know, they went out and they got Brian Burns, gave him a ton of money, and he's paired up with Thibodeau and Lawrence there. But offensively, yeah, I mean, you need to hit the reset button at the quarterback position, and they know it, and they, you know, and to their credit, right, we saw on Hard Knocks, for those who watched, they talked to the Patriots about moving up. The Patriots said, we're not moving, and they got Malik Nabers, who is obviously going to be a top-tier wide receiver in the league, barring injury or anything like that. The dude is the real deal already, and you could see it.
He is who Odell Beckham thought he was. That's kind of what I... Because like, I used to... Odell is the...
Odell was pretty awesome his rookie
year.
Yeah,
but when Odell's, when Odell's on your team, it's like that worst version of superstar to have where all he cares about is like doing triple moves and like making highlight plays. And so... You're also forced to like, you know, it's kind of like why I think the Bills are better this year because you ship off Stephon Diggs and now they can just like work the whole field. But like you have to force feed Odell. And obviously this is no longer applicable, but you had to force feed Odell. And by the way, this is the other thing that I always hate when everyone does the whole, as you said, we're going to have the annoying Eli Manning Hall of Fame conversation. His best years were with Eli Manning. And almost every single receiver that played with Eli, his best years were always with Eli. Like, so maybe he's not as bad as he thinks. This is the other problem. It's like the Giants do not get enough credit for being a crappy organization. Like, you had Lawrence Taylor. They had a period where they were great with an all-time great. Then they suck. They have a weird, like, a weird 2000s or the in 2000s Super Bowl appearance with, like, the ghost of Kerry Collins. Then they sucked. They get Eli. Eli's done. They suck. Like that's where it's just like, and then we have to kiss the ring of the Maras and the Tishes. Thank you for all you do. You're amazing people. Second generation. They handed you a franchise. Like what on earth have you actually done?
How you doing? You good?
It's raining.
You feel better? It's raining.
Yeah. Also, I know you're not the world's biggest golf guy. The President's Cup sucks. Like they've got to mix this. Like they're trying to make us think that this is a thing, and it's just not. It's boring. There's no juice. The course stinks. It honestly looks like they're playing the tournament you were at, the celebrity. Like I feel like we're out in like Reno, just watching like super soft, like boring golf course. Except there's no Lake Tahoe.
Can you update me real quick? Who are we playing here? It's USA versus who?
It's the Internationals. And so, but it's also...
But not Europeans?
Correct. So that's the Ryder Cup. That's the other problem.
Right. The Ryder Cup is actually awesome. Yeah.
Ryder Cup rocks.
And we lose that.
Correct.
Where it's competitive.
The problem with this one is also the PGA Tour owns it. And so they can't have any LIV guys. And a lot of the internationals are obviously, like the good international players would be LIV. There's no Bryson to make it at least watchable, you know. It's just, and right now, like at least the internet, like we skunk them 5-0 yesterday. And it's like this whole event, I think, just exists so that the Americans can feel good about themselves. Like, yeah, you lose every Ryder Cup, but you know, the President's Cup's there for you.
Man, I just feel like I just want to sit back and listen to you just rant all day.
Oh, I got one more. You ready?
Oh, I think I got one. I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe it's a faux outrage.
All right, I'll let it bake for you. Okay. So I've been trying to think. It's like something about this whole Pac-12 and Memphis thing. Like something about it just hasn't sat right with me. And I realized kind of what it was yesterday. Why are Washington State and Oregon State not taking more heat? Because clearly it is very obvious what is happening, and they have the right to do this. But they've basically said, we got all this money from the Pac-12, but we're keeping it. And then all of a sudden, you have these fan bases that are just minding their own business. You know, it wasn't like they were actively seeking this. All of a sudden, you start this media blitz about this new league, whatnot. You get everybody's fans fired up. And then it comes out like, well, we can't like actually, you know, we can't give you some of our money. I mean, come on. You know, like this is our money. It's not yours. And I feel like, they are not taking any heat when it's very clear what's going on. They are not wanting to share any of this money, and they're trying to rope in people to be in their conference.
What I don't understand, and I know, well, I guess I have a question for you.
All right.
Because maybe I read this wrong, and I know the Memphis AD spoke to the media yesterday,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, he spoke for like 25 minutes yesterday.
Okay. Is it over? Or is it, hey, if you want to give us a better offer and more money towards our buyout, we'll reconsider. My tinfoil hat conspiracy theory is that the Pac-12, who has completely screwed this whole thing up, is going to come to either Memphis or Tulane, more so Memphis, and say, all right, sorry, we messed up. Here's 15 mil to get out of your agreement with the AAC. Would they do it?
Do I think it's over? Yes. With that being said, I do think Ed Scott's got his phone on.
Which he should. He should listen to all offers. You know, you're not in a great conference, but the Pac-12 probably isn't as good as we thought. Like,
well, I mean, my thing is, at a certain point, like, are Boise, San Diego State, like, are they going to
leave? They should
gonna, like, yeah, like, our bad.
And that's my thing, too. Boise State, we'll start with them. Look, right now, Boise State is by far the biggest attraction to that conference. Not Washington State, not Oregon State. I get it. You guys were in the Pac-12. Cool. Boise State should be mad because clearly there was a understanding when these four schools in the, you know, middle of the night said, we're joining the Pac-12. And then they kind of puffed out their chest like, yeah. And now you look at the conference, you're like, all right. You're just kind of the Mountain West without New Mexico and Hawaii. Like, what about you is appealing? And now the Mountain West has kind of redone their thing. So UNLV and Air Force are getting a whole bunch of money from the buyout. I don't know what's next. Like, what random... I have another conspiracy theory.
All right.
What if the Pac-12 went to UConn and goes, hey, here's the deal. You guys don't have a football conference. We don't want you for anything else. You can stay in the Big East. But can you guarantee us that you'll let us play UConn basketball 4 times a year? Like, can we come to an agreement where you bring your crappy football team into our conference for our 8th team, and then...
So basically the Notre Dame ACC deal.
Essentially, right?
But revert. Instead of keeping, you know, your basketball gets to stay where it is, but we'll take your football if you...
Right. You don't have to be in our conference. You get to stay in the Big East, but you have to guarantee 2 home games and 2 road games a year in the Big East. For, you know, you get to host Boise and Colorado State, but you have to go to Viejas and play San Diego State and go play Washington State. Like, rotate it through. And if they get Gonzaga, maybe we make that an annual thing. I don't know. Like, that's... As crazy as that sounds, to me that makes the most sense instead of going to be like, hey, UNLV, or excuse me, UTEP, you want to be in the Pac-12?
See, my conspiracy is that...
Or they just go to Memphis and say, hey, we'll just pay for your whole buyout. Please come.
So my conspiracy is that the Mountain West teams basically did the math of, hey, if we stick together... This thing's like everybody's telling them no, and they're gonna have to get to, you know, you have to have 8 teams to have a conference. But let's be real, like, how are these teams gonna play 7 conference games and then try to find 5 other games? Like, and then, you know, if you're the Mountain West, you're basically like, hey, we're not playing you. So I think
that's the thing too. Mountain West, and they probably will. Mountain West should be like, nah, we're not gonna play you guys.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I would do. And then essentially, you're gonna get to the point where they've. Like, they're going to have to do the math. Like, are we really taking Sacramento State as they come up? Like, you know, like, they're going to have to do all that. With all due respect to Sacramento State, I'm not trying to
But I said with all due respect.
Yes, of course. I mean, I am Ricky Bobbying it. But, like, you know what I mean?
If I'm the Mountain West, and once again, I know this is now falling on deaf ears, and I think this is why people don't like college football too much, because of this nonsense, and I want to get into games. But my last thought on this is, if I'm the Mountain West, I'm talking to North Dakota State and South Dakota State. Say, come on down. Bring those badass football programs into our conference. And you just made our... Like, if you look at Sagarin, South Dakota State's like a top 35 program.
The problem is now they've made it so expensive to move up.
Oh, yeah.
You're talking
North
like...
North Dakota State, man, they've got cash. They got money.
I mean, they've made it...
But maybe they like winning national championships. I don't know. Like, I mean, think about
a school like Idaho. When they were in FBS, like, they were traditionally, what, one of the worst programs in the entire country? Well, now that they moved down to FCS, like, they're pretty good.
Yeah, they're top 10 program.
I mean, there's been examples of plenty of people. Like, you know, I mean, App State moved up and it didn't.
James Madison.
Yeah, JMU's moved up. But, like, also with a lot of teams, you have some inherent advantages when you first move up. It's the can you sustain it after, like, you get like more scholarships. They let you kind of like break the rules a little bit. That's also why you're not eligible for bowl games, and that gets everybody upset. But I, to me, it's like if I'm the Mountain West, I'm sitting there going, hey, we're all banding together. They're not going to be able to make this work. And they're just going to, in the end, they're going to have to do what we thought they were going to do 2 years ago anyway, which was they're going to have to merge with us.
You want some breaking and college football news?
I do.
It'll make you happy.
All right.
Because you're fired up today. I know what fires you up is Hugh Freeze.
What'd he do this time?
Peyton Thorne is starting again.
Oh, yeah. No, duh. No, he's going to just juggle quarterbacks. Like, it's going to be like circus music.
You hear that, Deuce Knight? You don't want to go to this. Come on, baby. Stay with my Irish. Oh, I got something that's fired me up.
All right.
And I know we just spent like 5-10 minutes on realignment, which, to be honest, I don't love realignment talk, and I, you know, would prefer realignment not to exist, but that's beside the point. So you mentioned folks getting mad about Daniel Jones.
Yep.
Clearly not watching the game. Stay away from my sport, talking heads that don't know anything about college football. Stay away. We don't want you. Because this Matthew Saluka story from UNLV with the NIL dispute took over the sport this week, and all of the jabronis who want to say the death to college football is coming all got to, you know, put their pitchforks out and their torches. Why don't you talk to me when you see the ratings for Alabama and Georgia this weekend about the death of the sport? Look, the sport's not perfect. NIL is not ideal with the way it's being governed. I will totally accept all of that. But this whole situation where UNLV starting quarterback alleges that he was guaranteed $100,000, which I have a lot of stuff on the other side saying, no, that never happened. Never signed a contract. His family, his agent does not sound great in this whole situation. I'm not exonerating UNLV, but my goodness, the people that just come out of the woodworks, death to college sports. You know what I like doing on Saturday, Jeffrey?
Betting.
Betting and watching college football. And you know what a lot of people like doing?
Betting and watching college football.
Yeah, and it's not going anywhere. It's not perfect. Realignment kind of sucks, but you know what? Realignment's kind of awesome too, because we get Oregon, Ohio State, we get Texas, Georgia this year. You know who likes that? Television networks. You know who likes that? All of us. Why are you? Do you ever watch The Simpsons?
I do. Well, I'm not
not new stuff, but like old school, right?
Yes.
Do you remember when they found Bart and Lisa found the creator of Itchy and Scratchy?
Yes.
And he put them out of business.
Yeah.
And that guy said, well, I got my solid gold house. I got my rocket car. Like, that's what I feel like people out there want. Do you want college football and college basketball to go away? Like, I don't understand the anger out there. Be like, ah, look at this. This is what you get when the NIL. And I'm like, okay, yeah, it's not ideal. And we've had rumors about other people not being fulfilled. Oh, by the way, people who know nothing about UNLV now with the hot take, UNLV looks like dummies, and how does Vegas not have the money? Or maybe UNLV was like, dude, you're good. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
That's what I've heard.
No.
That's what I've heard.
This is so obvious. And fairness, this story drove me insane because it was very obvious to me everybody was lying. Or at least everybody. And I get it. The rule number one of this show is don't tell the story, tell your story. Everybody was telling their story. But it was very obvious what happened. Because this happens throughout college football. He was told if you win the starting job, you'll get paid this. Do I think it was $100,000? No, I don't. But maybe. And also, by the way, did you see the exec from Circa said he offered to pay it?
Yeah, so I'm a little upset about this too. Because, and we love Brett McMurphy. Brett's a friend, and he just wrote a story, and he got a quote from Mike Palm, who's a VP at Circa. Mike Palm, that VP at Circa, went on my network and said the same thing, but Brett's getting all the run. I'm like, dude, we had this story two days ago.
Put it on Twitter?
We did. It's out there. It's an audio clip. But regardless, yes, Derek Stevens, the owner of Circa.
Go Blue.
Went to his executive VP, Mike Palm, and said, hey, call up UNLV and tell him we'll pay the $100,000. And per the story, UNLV said, we're moving on. We're not thinking about this anymore. If they needed Matt Saluka, this is their starting quarterback. I know we're getting in the weeds here, but if they needed that quarterback, they would have got the money. And here's another thing. Their top receiver is named by a guy by the name of Ricky White. He had over 1,400 receiving yards a year ago.
No, they have an NFL receiver.
Every Power Four team in the country wanted that dude. Reportedly, I don't know if it's true, but reportedly Notre Dame offered him $250,000. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But he's still at UNLV. Guess what? His checks are cashing. He's still there. He's tweeting about the backup quarterback and Haj Malik Williams. So we had Steve Cofield, who's a longtime ESPN radio, ESPN Las Vegas radio host on our show earlier this week on VSiN. He told us that when Barry Odom and the coaching staff told the team that moving forward it would be Haj Malik Williams and Cameron Friel as their quarterbacks, apparently the team cheered.
Oh, I know that. I know for a fact. This same thing happened with Ole Miss and Judkins.
Judkins, yeah.
Yeah, Quinshon.
Now look, I'm not trying to crap on the kid.
No. That's like, the thing. You have the right. Like, the system is the system. Like, you have the right to do it.
But everyone was so quick to say, this is how sports are going. We're going to see more of this. It's like the bowl game opt-outs. Oh, this is going to ruin the sport. Or, look, I love bowl games probably more than anyone in the world. I freaking love them. I get to call a couple of them. I love watching them. I love betting them. I totally get why people opt out of them. I totally get it. Because it is an exhibition game. But it's not ruining the sport for kids opting out of it. And it's also not ruining the sport, or kids aren't dummies if they want to play another game. Like, I remember before opt-outs became a bigger thing, Myles Garrett, I think, played in the Texas Bowl or something like that with A&M. And everyone was like, why would he play in this game? I don't know. Maybe he likes playing football.
Remember we talked about with Matt Corral. Remember when Matt made the choice to play in the Sugar Bowl? And everyone's like, why on earth? It's like, I don't know. That's what they do.
It's the Sugar Bowl. Like, it's a big deal. Like, Jalen Smith, he ruined his career in the NFL because he played in the Fiesta Bowl with Notre Dame. It was an awful situation. I feel horrible for him. But guess what? He's told people he would do it again.
Yeah, so I made the joke. Like, I can't wait for somebody. We're so obsessed with someone's potential value.
Well, it's like when people used to care about, and I think I've used this analogy on the show, like when your favorite team has a player, declare for the NBA draft.
Yeah.
Oh, could have got his degree. You don't care about his degree. You care about your team.
Yeah.
If your neighbor left to go start a startup, if he dropped out of college, he's like, hey, I'm going to go do a startup, or I'm going to go do this. You'd be like, man, best of luck, buddy. Get out there. Like, it sucks because it's your team. But you don't really care about anyone's education. Stop kidding yourself.
Do you really care whether or not that guy gets a general studies degree?
And oh, by the way, I believe the way the scholarships are structured, they can come back and get that
100%
degree for free.
Yes.
Because those schools want them to get their degree because it helps
the APR
their APR score and their graduation rates.
No, but it is funny. Like, I do think that's kind of gone away. Like, that, I think that mentality's gone away. But now it has been, like, we've swung too far, and it happens in America. It's like, we usually have a position that is incorrect, but then the pendulum swings too far, and we just start going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. But we've now swung from, you should really always stay. Like, you know, it's better to stay. It's always better to stay. Like, Bill Parcells said, you know, give me a 3-year starter. Like, those guys are going to be ready. To now, it's like, we're just so obsessed with, like, somebody's potential value that it's almost like, well, don't even play. It's like, that's the whole point. Like, I'm honestly ready for, someone needs to get out in front of it. Write the think piece. Cooper Flagg shouldn't play at Duke.
Oh, it's coming.
Like, he'll be.
When Zion got hurt in his year at
Duke? Yeah, and then everybody went bananas that he came back and played. It's like, what are you talking? Like, that's what he wanted to do.
Hey, playing basketball, you know, at some point, playing sports is fun. And, you know, people who haven't played team sports don't recognize this. Those are your brothers or your sisters. Like, you do anything for them. And to play another, like, I would pay many dollars to suit up again and play another game of college basketball. Now, once again, I had no issue. I had no opportunity to go to the NBA or anything like that because I was just some random, you know, unathletic white dude who, you know, played 8 minutes a game in a D3 school. But, it's just, I think overall my point is we're so quick, the collective we want the hot takes. We want everything to blow up, you know, especially, you know, look, I don't like the NCAA. I think they're a bunch of dopes, and I think they are to blame more so than UNLV or the Saluka family in this whole situation. But I don't want Itchy and Scratchy to go away like it did in The Simpsons. I don't want college football to go away. Why? Because I love the damn sport. And when I see 100,000 people in Tuscaloosa on Saturday night, it's going to warm my heart because that is what this sport is all about. So stop trying to ruin it with your dumbass hot takes and not knowing the whole situation about what actually happened with UNLV and a quarterback who alleges he should have made $100,000.
Now, the biggest problem is we have too many people that don't actually like sports that are in sports. Because, to your point, do you remember the first time we had fans back and Wisconsin played on Big Noon Saturday and they showed Jump Around? And it's like, I like wiping away tears. It's like, we just got so obsessed with like, when everything on the planet becomes about whether or not, you know, someone is being taken advantage of. It's like people get taken advantage of every single day. These kids also get to play. Like, you know what I mean? I'm not saying like, oh, this is all they should get. It's like, yes, there's clearly a problem when they're the ones that are generating all this money and we're struggling to come up with, we're not struggling. The reality is the people that have the money don't want to share the money. Like, it goes back to the same problem with Washington State and Oregon State. But it's like, we just have so many people that don't actually like what they're talking about. But the problem is what they would actually like to talk about, they can't get paid for.
Just stop messing with my sport, man.
There's a huge, like, that's the other problem. It's like the actually thing that concerns me is the people that are now in charge of college football are television executives, and television executives don't understand college football. They understand the NFL. And we're becoming diet NFL. Now, with that being said, we get Alabama and we get Georgia in September. And we're going to talk about it next with Blake Topmeyer, who I'm sure will be there. Stick around. You're listening to Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
If your day sounds like,
we need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through, you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the markable fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Blake Topmeyer is the senior national college football columnist for the USA Today Sports Network. Still host of SEC Football Unfiltered. The podcast is available each and every week, all major podcast platforms, on Twitter, on X, at B Topmeyer. Blake, we're airing the grievances. You got any problems with any people that you'd like to air out and make yourself feel better?
Ooh, I no, but I do love a good airing of grievances session. It's like Festivus come early.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was telling Tim, you know, Festivus isn't a day; it's a lifestyle. it's in your heart. It should be inside of you at all times. I think the other big one that we just stumbled upon, and I think you'll probably agree with this. Why do we have so many people in our field that don't actually like sports, or more importantly, like, want to see sports not played? Like, that is a huge, huge thing I'm starting to notice at an increasing degree.
Are there people demanding some sports not be played this
weekend? Well, we've gotten the UNLV takes have been delicious because it's like no one has actually cared to get the story. It's just they've cherry-picked whatever side you're on. If you want to say the kid's a quitter, you've cherry-picked sure. the argument that you want. If you want to say, you know, the kid's a victim, you've cherry-picked that. If you want to say it's the end of the world as we know it, they've cherry-picked that. It's like, I feel like that's just where we are right now.
Yeah, and I think it has the potential to be this great story if this backup quarterback, if he comes in and keeps UNLV humming. I mean, there's a chance that this could wind up being like the story of the fall if I understand it's a big if. This guy obviously had been the backup for the first few weeks of the season, apparently for a reason. But I don't. I mean, it seems like UNLV is pretty high on the backup. So if he keeps it rolling and they contend for the Group of Five bid, then you know what a story that could be. So yeah, I mean, that was just a weird story this week, and really my take on it. It's kind of mild in comparison to some of the what else we've seen out there. My instant thought was like, I don't know if you guys have seen Suits, but you know, there's a scene in that show where Rachel Zane had received a verbal offer from Louis Litz, one of the characters in the show, and goes to cash in on that verbal offer a couple years later. And as Louis informs Rachel with a little more colorful language than I'll say, but he basically tells Rachel that verbal offers don't mean anything. Yes, they're supposed to be binding, but I mean, you know, I'm not knocking the kid for it or anything, the athlete, but I mean, I do think that's the lesson here, that like, if there's no offer from the collective in writing, and especially like if there's nothing from the collective and the head coach didn't tell you anything, you know, we don't really know for sure what went down here, but even if the athlete's version of the story is 100% true, I do think it's kind of a lesson of you know, if you don't hear it from the head coach and if you don't see it from the collective, unfortunately, you probably have to be skeptical of whether, you know, said offer is real.
Yeah, yeah. UNLV has dug in their heels here on this whole thing, and you know, it's a big he said, and you know, whether it was, you know, Matthew Saluka's brother who talked to Bud Elliott over at CBS Sports, who really didn't essentially told him, yeah, we didn't sign anything. And it's like, look, that stinks, but you know, to take a leap of faith to move across country and you know, and then they're, oh, we had all these other offers. Well, did you? Because you
right.
know, you probably would have gone to that offer if it was in writing. So I also think there's a little bit of a, hey, we're 3-0. We just won two games on national television, and I want more money. And that's kind of my feel about this whole thing. And I imagine we'll talk more about this game moving forward, which is, you know, hilarious on a weekend where we've got four top 25 matchups, and UNLV Fresno State has been one that has kind of caught a lot of wind here. But Jackson Woodard is a captain of the defense for UNLV. He retweeted a picture of Haj Malik Williams, the backup, that said QB1, and he said, "Bout time, let's ride."
Right.
Everything that I've kind of gathered, and once again, I'm not trying to drag anyone through the mud, but I think there was a lot of excitement inside that locker room to know they were turning to Haj Malik Williams, who's a transfer from Campbell. So we'll see how the game plays out. And to your point, it could be a really unique story where, you know, they ride kind of like the Rams in the late 90s. We're gonna ride with Haj Malik Williams. They're gonna play good football, Dick Vermeil style. So curious about this one, no doubt, on Saturday.
Guys, you don't just replace a 43% passer.
That's true.
You know what I mean? Like, it's incredibly tough to do.
He was a good runner.
Yeah,
he's a good runner.
Yeah, he was.
Their
right.
defense also very underrated. But
let's. Oh no,
enough of UNLV talk.
Barry Odom, he coached here. He always has a very good defense. Let's get to the game that actually matters. Do we think it can crack 10 million viewers?
Oh, I think it could.
So I've looked it up. The highest for this year is 9 the Texas-Michigan game, $9.19 million. Also important to note that that game was at noon Eastern.
Yeah, and then you got the factor, I don't really know how much this matters to people, but you know, is anybody going to be dragged in just by the curiosity of a former president being there? Any of his faithful that maybe wouldn't normally watch this game might stumble in to flip it on because of Donald Trump's presence at this game. But I mean, it's got a little bit of everything, right? Like, I mean, I wrote about this week. I don't think it's got that game of the century feel to it quite, because I just don't think we will have that game of the century type vibe anymore with the playoff. Because regardless of who loses this game, you know, either losing team would have still a reasonable shot at making it to the playoff. So, you know, it doesn't have that sort of loser go home feel to it, but I'm okay with that. Like, I'm okay. It still feels like a huge game. It doesn't feel like a game of the century type moment, but it feels like a huge game. It feels like a game of the month at the very least. And I'm okay sacrificing a little bit of game of the century vibes for the sake of the expanded playoff and what could be, you know, as I wrote, a season of the century type of situation, you know, with this first year of the expanded playoff. But even though it doesn't feel like the absolute pinnacle, a game of the century, like, it's still, I think it's still pretty important because, you know, we're going to get this first litmus test of Kalen DeBoer. And, you know, if Alabama fans lose, or if Alabama lose, fans will probably overreact of like, oh my gosh, why did we hire this guy? And then the flip side of this is, if Georgia loses, you know, all the takes are going to come out of the woodwork that, you know, Kirby's lost his program, and this, you know, this is a sign that all the high-speed driving shows that players aren't committed to the cause anymore, which will be a gross overreaction, but you know those takes are going to come out of the woodwork if Georgia loses. At the end of the day, though, what's fascinating to me is, like, I'm not convinced either one of these two teams is the best team in the SEC. I still think Texas, especially if Quinn Ewers, you know, gets healthy and back to the way he was playing, you know, that we saw him a couple weeks ago, I still think Texas might be the best team in the conference, which could make you the best team in the country. But nonetheless, you know, these are the two teams that we got in front of us this weekend, and it'll be the game of the season up until a few weeks later when Georgia goes to Texas.
No, because I completely agree with you. Like, you know, it's never going to have the stakes that, you know, the Alabama LSU game, the game of the century, which was an awful football game, for the record. It was truly a tear. Like, 9-6 was not great defense. It was horrific offense. Like, it was incompetent quarterback play, horrific offense. I think the thing that's fascinating to this game about for me is I feel like Alabama is closer to, like, fully formed. You know what I mean? Whereas Georgia, I think Georgia probably has a higher ceiling, but it feels like they're still kind of work in progress. And I know they've had some injuries that they're dealing with and whatnot, but I think for me the real question is, does Georgia have the Alabama heebie-jeebies, or did Kirby have the Nick Saban heebie-jeebies?
Well, that's what I thought about too. Like, does Saban exiting the stage kind of remove a little bit of that mystique that maybe Kirby felt, or maybe he just it was just a bad coaching matchup for him. I mean, you know, those two guys knew each other incredibly well, and one whom he knew incredibly well, the scales tipped even a little bit more heavily into Saban's favor than they normally did. So, yeah, I mean, that was the one mountain that Kirby struggled to repeatedly climb. I mean, he beat Saban the one time, you know, in a big time that it was, prevented Saban from getting that last national championship, you know, with Kirby turning the tables on him in that season where they met twice. But for the most part, yeah, I mean, Saban had the upper hand. He was 5-1 against Kirby. And like, as good as Georgia was, you know, was during that period and still is, like, that was, I mean, Alabama was still the thorn in their side that I think kind of, well, I mean, they prevented the three-peat.
I think they've clearly kept them from having four national titles.
Yeah, they definitely prevented one with the Tua pass.
Yeah.
And they also may have prevented one last year. I don't know if Georgia beats Michigan in a national championship game. I think it probably would have been a close spread. I think I probably would have picked Georgia if those two teams would have met. I don't know that it's a slam dunk for Georgia because Michigan was stinking good last year. But, yeah, I think they definitely prevented a third one, and very plausibly they could have prevented Georgia from having and Kirby from having two more here. So, yeah. But if Kirby loses to Kalen DeBoer in their first matchup, then immediately it's like Kalen DeBoer comes in and sits on the throne, at warp speed. But again, in reality, I'm not so sure Steve Sarkisian isn't walking in and sitting on the throne. We won't know more about that until a couple weeks from now. But, you know, that's going to be sort of the instant takes of this is either, Kirby learns how to conquer Bama with Saban on the game day set, or Kalen DeBoer strides in and says, this is my conference. But like I said, it might really be Steve Sarkisian's conference at this moment.
Well, I think I got your column if Bama wins. Every time Georgia goes up against an opponent that has equal talent, they get outcoached.
Ooh, yeah. I guess the Ohio State matchup would be the exception there. Although Ohio State had Georgia kind of on the ropes there and let them off the hook. Georgia had that furious rally a couple years ago in that college football semifinal game. That would be a case of where equal talent was on the field, and I think Kirby outcoached Ryan Day in the second half of that game. But yes.
We don't let facts get in the way of our takes. We can just spin that. That shows even more so how Ryan Day was born on third base.
Right, but there are very few instances, you're right, where Georgia has to face a scenario of equal talent. And when it comes to Alabama, all but the one time, Alabama has had the upper hand. So, the thing that I considered this week on the podcast was, who has bigger reason to panic after a loss? And I actually think it might be Georgia, because if we're looking at landmines on the schedule, either team has a handful of potential landmines left on the schedule. But when you look at the fact that Georgia has to go to Austin, they're at Ole Miss, and then they host Tennessee in November. I mean, if they were to lose this one and then lose in Austin, I don't know that they would lose again. They might go 10-2 and be fine, and they're probably hitting on the road at that point for a first-round playoff game. But, you know, it starts to get uncomfortable, I think, for Georgia if they lose tomorrow night because of that landmine looming next month when they have to go to Texas. And then, you know, if they were to lose there, they're at, like, the midpoint of the season, and they can't lose anymore, or they're out of the playoff. And so it's uncomfortable for Alabama, too. But I think because, you know, LSU has looked, relatively ordinary, I feel like, throughout the first 4 weeks of the season, and is somewhat fortunate that they don't have a second loss already in that game against South Carolina. I know that's in Baton Rouge, but that I feel like I favor Alabama a little bit more in that one than maybe I would have in the preseason. They go on the road to Oklahoma. You know, Oklahoma has shown no signs of life on offense. I feel good about Alabama in that one. I think Tennessee will be tough for Bama, but the fact that Alabama gets to avoid Texas, they don't have to play Ole Miss. Like, I think it's potentially more perilous for Georgia because of that road game at Texas in a few weeks if they were to lose Saturday night than it would be for Alabama.
Yeah, I agree with you. Simply because Georgia, if you include Georgia, the teams that we believe are the top five teams right now, Alabama, Texas, Georgia, Tennessee, Ole Miss, they have to play all of them, and three of them are on the road.
That's right, yeah. And Alabama, they get to avoid Ole Miss and Texas. So, yeah, Alabama's schedule is kind of middle of the pack, I guess. But Georgia's, I mean, they're kind of at the top end of the conference in terms of toughest schedule. And I guess you guys know, I'm not a huge conspiracy theorist guy, but I guess...
Go on.
But it makes for good radio, right? So go on. To the extent that I am, you look at the way the SEC has drawn up the schedules this year, and you just kind of wonder, like, did they give the teams that they thought would be able to navigate the toughest schedules, did they load their plate up with the toughest opponents, teams like Georgia, teams like Alabama, and think, hey, they can, even with this tough schedule, they can still get to 10-2 and be in the playoff conversation, while then giving teams like Missouri, like Ole Miss, like Tennessee, that they thought, maybe these are going to be fringe playoff teams. Now, from what we've seen of Ole Miss and Tennessee, I don't know that they are fringe playoff teams. But you know, you could see maybe that being the forecast, that teams like Ole Miss, Tennessee, and Missouri are fringe playoff teams, and so the SEC serves up to them much more favorable schedules than what they gave to Alabama and Georgia, so they could create this overload scenario where you could have like six or seven teams, you know, come Selection Sunday having playoff resumes. I mean, you just sort of wonder, was that kind of intentional with the way the SEC drew up these schedules to create a scenario where they could have six or seven?
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.